It's the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast. Here we go. With Malia Jacobson as your host.
Hello, and welcome to the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast. I'm your host, sleep and health journalist, Malia Jacobson. Today's topic is a good one, and I've been looking forward to it, so let's get right to it. Cannabidiol, or CBD, is increasingly popular. Maybe you've heard of it. It's a remedy for anxiety and is believed by many to improve sleep. I wanted to see what the research says, so I turned to a researcher with the exact background and expertise I was hoping to find, and I'm very excited to have him here today. Scott Shannon, MD, is the lead author of Cannabidiol in Anxiety and Sleep, a Large Case Series, published in the Permanente Journal in 2019, and I will post a link in the episode notes. He's also a holistic medicine practitioner, author, and assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of Colorado Children's Hospital, Denver. He's an influential leader in the world of integrative medicine as past president of the American Holistic Medical Association, past president of the American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine, founding board member for the Academy of Integrative Health and Medicine, and founding board member for the American Board of Integrative Medicine, which is now the sole certifying body for the profession of integrative medicine. In 2010, he founded Wholeness Center, a cross-disciplinary center for mental health in Fort Collins, Colorado. He's published numerous articles about his research on CBD in mental health, and that is why we have him here today. Let's get him on the line. Hello, Dr. Shannon. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to have you on the podcast.
Well, my pleasure, Malia. Happy to join you and happy to participate.
Thank you. The reason that I wanted to have you on is you just have a really interesting background and a broad range of research interests within your specialty of integrative medicine. You are a physician, you're an integrative medicine practitioner. You founded the Wholeness Clinic, which approaches mental health from an integrative medicine perspective. And you have authored a parenting book, Parenting the Whole Child, which is a book that my attachment parenting book club read a few years back and all really enjoyed. I'm curious about what has led you to the practice of integrative medicine and what prompted you to write a parenting book as a physician who's an integrative medicine practitioner.
Well, I trained as a child adolescent psychiatrist. I'm also a general adult psychiatrist. But for the first 15, 20 years of my practice, it was mostly focused on integrative child and adolescent psychiatry, holistic methods to help children, adolescents, young adults, families do better. And that was my focus. I trained in acupuncture. I trained a lot in nutrition, herbal supplements, nutritional supplements, and functional medicine approaches to assessing and treating people. And that was a significant part of my practice for a few decades.
And then the parenting book, so that was published a few years back, and that approaches parenting from more of an attachment parenting or a whole child perspective, which is, I think, what I appreciated about it, as well as the other folks in my book club. So I was excited to connect with you because you are also someone who has done some research in the world of CBD and using CBD for anxiety and sleep. And this is a topic that I wanted to address on the podcast for some time, and it is hard to find researchers who are up to date on what's going on in this world and in this space and who are not trying to sell a CBD product or who aren't, you know, trying to talk about the virtues of some certain brand. And so I really wanted to talk to a researcher, somebody who was more in the medical space. Your study your paper on cannabidiol in anxiety and sleep, a large case series published in the Permanente Journal last year, talked about this exact subject. There is a lot of interest in CBD for personal use. And I feel like it's especially picked up over these past few months as everyone's dealing with a lot of anxiety, change. Is that something that you are seeing as well, just an increased interest in this topic? And if so, what do you think is driving that?
Well, I think there's just this huge explosion of interest in CBD across the board. It's kind of, it's become a cultural phenomena. I'm not quite sure how to describe it or explain it, but it's happening where we're putting CBD in sports products, we're putting it in food, we're putting it in just about everything. The only thing I've seen similar to it in the last 40 years is the phenomena that went around that went on fish oil maybe 20 years ago, but this is even more significant. I think it's curiosity around cannabis. I think it's the deregulation of cannabis, legalization of cannabis that's contributed. I think it's some rebound from years of prohibition. And I think there's really solid research that cannabis is actually a medicine and has been, as we know, for thousands of years, starting with the Chinese even 3,000 years ago. So it's cannabis has this long history as a medicinal agent. It was well used in this country 150, even 100 years ago before laws started to regulate its use. So some of it's a bounce back, but one of the issues we have with anxiety, with sleep, or actually with any sort of mental health applications is there really just is insufficient research. And that's what drew me into this. I found this huge gap between what was going on and what claims were being made and the actual science. So we decided at our clinic, Wholeness Center in Fort Collins, that we, because we were using quite a bit of it and seeing great results, that we needed to have some contribution to the professional literature and research base. So we began to collect data from our patients and began to publish it with IRB approval. So what we looked at was anxiety and sleep first, and we found that we saw significant benefit for anxiety that was pronounced within a week and endured over time in the patients that we published on. We looked at sleep as well. We weren't as convinced. What we saw was that sleep improved somewhat, but then sort of bounced back. Interestingly, our patients told us that they felt like they were sleeping better. And our sense was that they were just not worrying about it as much. So that may be contributing. It's that a lot of people that have sleep issues actually have anxiety issues as well. And the anxiety issues may drive their sleep problems because they can't shut off their mind or they obsess about problems or concerns. Right. So we also saw a benefit for CBD with post-traumatic stress disorder, for thought disorder in patients with autism. So we saw a lot of potential applications. And what I noticed is that we didn't see much in the way of side effects either. So it seemed to be, and the research supports this, it didn't seem to be have any safety issues.
Okay, and can you talk about how people were using CBD? Was it before bed? Was it throughout the day? What dosage or how was it being applied?
We're predominantly using capsules. Sometimes we would use a spray, oral spray. People seem to prefer the capsules overall. And we were using it, it has a long half-life, 30 to 40 hours typically. So you don't need to dose it multiple times a day unless you're using the sort of low-dose spray. We would dose it once or twice a day, 10 to 15 milligrams typically. And if people were complaining predominantly of anxiety, we'd have them dose with breakfast And if they were complaining predominantly of sleep, we'd have them dose at dinner time. So that's the way we use it. And what we found is that 10 to 15, 20 milligrams seemed to be enough to get most people a response for anxiety.
Okay, well, thank you. So one thing that I have seen in the research, I mean, as you mentioned, there is a huge gap in the research in terms of what CBT's actual effects are on anxiety and sleep, but there is some research out there. And what I have found in my reporting for different health publications just over the past year is there is some research to suggest that CBD is a wakefulness promoting agent. So it does, it helps anxiety, but it actually helps alertness. And so when I hear people say that they're using it for sleep or that they're using it for bed, it seems like that may be counterproductive. Does that align with what you have seen in the research or in your practice?
I would say that we've not seen anything in our practice that CBD makes sleep worse. I know there's some research out there, researchers out there, such as Ethan Russo, that feels that CBD is a stimulant or a wakefulness promoting product. And that's not what I see in our clinical experience. It's not what I see in the research. What I've seen in the research is that CBD and THC have contradictory effects within the central nervous system. That is, that THC is excitatory and somewhat disorganizing. CBD seems to be calming and more centering. And that actually for sleep applications, my thinking is that products that contain both THC and CBD are probably going to be somewhat better for sleep in ways we don't understand. We've also seen that same thing be true with pain, is that it looks like for pain issues, CBD alone is not as good as CBD and THC together. So often what I recommend if people are looking for a sleep aid, using a product contains a very small amount of THC and a very small amount of CBD often seems to be what I've heard people tell me as the best response. There's some research to support. One sleep study gave people THC and CBD in 5 milligram allotments and either gave them alone or combined. And what they saw is that when the dose got up like over 10 milligrams, the THC alone made people sleep worse. And that the THC and CBD together in a one-to-one combination was best for sleep. And that's really what I think I see in my experience, is that about a one-to-one ratio, and typically small amounts, 1, 2, 3 milligrams of each component, seems like it's better for sleep. And but for anxiety, we find that THC makes anxiety worse. If people having significant anxiety and they smoke a high THC cannabis strain, they will often become more anxious, paranoid, distressed. Pretty good research to support that. If you give schizophrenic patients THC by IV, they become much more paranoid.
Okay, got it.
Cannabis, THC containing compounds for anxiety. I like CBD alone for anxiety. And so basically hemp-based CBD, stuff that's not regulated, controlled, is what we've tended to use in our practice.
And after you took a look at this research out there and completed this paper that we talked about, the case series, did that shift the way that you were working with patients or your advice to patients after you kind of took a big look at the macro level of what's happening?
It certainly reinforced our belief that CBD is useful for anxiety. And in my thinking right now, it's one of my top three agents, natural agents for treating significant anxiety. And it sort of softened our thinking about CBD and sleep. So I would say that we're not promoting CBD. People ask me and say, I'd like to take CBD for sleep. What do you think? And I said, well, try it. See what you think. But I'm not going to make that recommendation myself. If someone told me I was going to take THC alone for sleep, I would just caution them, particularly if they have an anxiety issue. But certainly low doses are better. I was talking to one veteran yesterday. We were interviewing him for our MDMA PTSD study that we're doing with the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. And he said, yeah, I go in and every night before bedtime, I take a bong rip. That was his exact quote. And just get a dose of cannabis. And it helps them fall to sleep. So that amount of cannabis may be helpful for sleep. That's probably a milligram or two. But I think to smoke a whole joint or multiple bong hits or whatever dosing you may be doing, 10 milligrams, 20 milligrams of THC, particularly if it's a high THC strain, probably going to be counterproductive for sleep. Some people are much more sensitive to the stimulatory effect.
Right. And you mentioned that it's CBD is one of your top three agents that you're recommending for anxiety. Just curious, what are the other two?
We use inositol quite a bit, inositol powder. It's a sugar alcohol natural compound found in our food. And it's been shown to be helpful for a range of different anxiety disorders. Very well tolerated, almost no. It can have a little bit of gastric or a GI upset, but it's quite safe otherwise. So we use a lot of powder and inositol powder, and also L-theanine, which is found in green tea.
Right, that's a great one as well. So how can people use what's out there right now in the research on CBD to guide some of their decision-making when it comes to this extremely popular popular agent?
Well, one of the things is that there is so much publication and research going on CBD now that it's sort of hard to stay current.
Right.
When I first started looking at this, there were maybe a few hundred clinical papers a year. And now there's 3,000 to 5,000 clinical papers per year. So it's almost impossible to stay current with what's happening. But I think talking to a professional who's comfortable with cannabis and CBD is one way to start. So that's one thought. I think that given the safety of CBD, that people can try low dose. I mean, I don't, what we've seen and what's published in the literature, I mean, they're using Epidiolex, which is CBD containing medicine for Dravet syndrome. And they're using that in hundreds of milligrams a day for children. And the safety profile is pretty good. And we're talking about 5 or 10 or 15 milligrams a day total. So the doses are well tolerated. We don't see much in the way of side effects. Some people think that CBD can contribute to changes in appetite, maybe a decrease, maybe some loose stools or diarrhea. Actually, at the doses we were doing that at, we did not see anything like that consistently. And being America, that a slight reduction in appetite or a slight reduction in weight for most people is not a negative side effect. But in general, our experience has been with hemp-derived CBD that we see it as well tolerated and pretty effective for anxiety. If people were looking for a sleep aid, I'm not sure I'd steer them towards that, but I don't know that I would strongly discourage them either, just because of the pretty good safety profile. I mean, the cost is not insignificant, $40, $50, $60, $70 bucks a month. It's not cheap, but it's not outrageous either. So cost is a consideration.
Right. And I have heard of people using CBD to begin their workday for the purpose of promoting alertness. Is that an effect that you have seen or a use that seems to be effective or supported by research?
I in my experience, I don't see that. Once again, I see it as slightly calming.
Right.
And for most people, you know, the anxiety can be a little bit disorganizing. So maybe it helps people be more clear. But we certainly saw no evidence that CBD deteriorated sleep when taken at bedtime. If CBD was a stimulating agent, I would think we would have saw a negative curve on sleep. We did not see that. We saw improvement of sleep, but it was not long lived. Some people may do it because they feel good about it, but I don't know that I see science to support that.
All right. Well, because the topic of this podcast is improving sleep, what are some things that folks could do or that you wish that your patients knew or practiced when it came to their sleep, if CBD isn't going to be the thing that helps them?
Well, from my integrative psychiatry perspective, caffeine is an issue. And if someone has a significant sleep problem and they're consuming any caffeine at all, I think that's a mistake. A lot of people will say, well, I just have it at breakfast. I tell people in my practice that as long as you don't have a mood issue, an anxiety issue, or a sleep issue, you can drink all the caffeine you want. But if you're in my care and you have a significant sleep issue, I'm going to recommend that you come off caffeine, and then we give you a few weeks without any caffeine in your system to see what sleep looks like. Caffeine is very stimulatory, and it is promoting anxiety, and it promotes sort of obsessive thoughts and repetitive thoughts that make it harder for people. And some people are just acutely sensitive to it. I mean, I do know people that can drink caffeine all day and sleep like a rock, but I also know people like myself that if I had a cup of coffee in the morning, I would not sleep well that night. The first step I do is I try to make sure that caffeine is not an issue. I also look at sort of exercise. I think that exercising during the day, particularly in the morning, is helpful for sleep, but intense exercise may be counterproductive, particularly if it's in the late afternoon or evening. I try to get people off electronics by 8 p.m. I mean, if they want to watch a TV show, that's fine, but I'm talking about Facebook, surfing the internet, email, anything that gets your brain clicking. You really need to downshift your brain in the evening. I try to get people to reduce lighting in their home past 7 or 8 p.m. and occasional incandescent lights, but not brightly lit environment. And soothing music, essential oils such as lavender oil and other calming, soothing oils. I'm a big proponent of tea, things like sleepy time tea or bedtime tea. Chamomile, things that are relaxing. We use a lot of nervines in our practice, things like passion flower and valerian and other things that have a calming effect on the central nervous system. Meditation. I'm a big believer in meditation as a tool to help people calm their mind and slow down before sleep. And there's only been a couple things that have ever been shown to improve stage 4 sleep. One of them is, I'm going to use the technical term, thermal augmentation. A more popular way of saying it is take a hot bath or get in the hot tub. Get your body heated up, typically 30 to 60 minutes before bedtime, not right at bedtime. And most people will see an improvement in sleep, particularly deep sleep. And that's the recharging sleep that we need the most. So there are a lot of things you can do to augment and help sleep besides prescription sleep aids, which are not really the be-all end-all. They don't really add anything to total sleep time, and they have a problem with habituation or dependence. So not a big fan of those.
Right. Well, that's great advice. Thank you so much. Yeah, and that mirrors some of what I've seen in the research and what I tell people as well. So thank you for that. Where can people learn more about you and your work?
Let's see. Well, we have a website at wholeness.com for my center, the Wholeness Center in Fort Collins, Colorado. So wholeness.com. You can find out my work, our clinic. We do intensive assessment of significant psychiatric problems. We're a big believer in neurofeedback and QEEGs to get an assessment of the brain. We do a lot of metabolic testing, such as organic acid tests, genomind, genetic assessments, and try to put it together in a comprehensive assessment that includes psychiatrists, naturopaths, counselors, in a comprehensive model.
Well, thank you so much. This has been really helpful, really interesting, and I have enjoyed learning more about you. Thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome, Malia. My pleasure. Happy to be on your podcast.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There you have it. Thank you so much for listening to the end, and I hope it was interesting to you. I know I learned a few things. I'll post the link to the paper in the episode notes at sleepwellstaywell.com. You can reach me at malia@sleepwellstaywell.com, and you can learn more about me at maliajacobson.com. You can find out more about the podcast and past episodes at sleepwellstaywell.com, and you can find the podcast on all the social media channels at sleepwellstaywell. Thank you again for listening. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week, and I look forward to chatting with you again next week about another new development in research and a great local researcher with an interesting new development in the world of pediatric sleep disorders. So that will be next Thursday, and I look forward to it. Until then, please sleep well and stay well. Bye-bye.
It's the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast, now you know. Thanks for checking out the show.